Welcome back to The Deeper You Dive, a podcast where we dive deep into one record per season. Last episode, we concluded our analysis of the opening track of East, titled Emily. Emily is not a singular narrative track. Rather, it has three verses that are distinctly different from each other, but overlap in important ways, as we discussed to some length last episode. In this episode, we will analyze the second track of the album, titled Monkey and Bear. Let's dive in.
Down in the green hay, where monkey and bear usually lay, they woke from a stable boy's cry. Did someone come quick? The horses got loose, got grass sick. They'll founder, faint, they'll die.
Joanna describes the scene of a monkey and a bear sleeping in the green hay, likely meaning long grass. A stable boy wakes them, so we are presented with the idea of a farmland. The stable boy cries for help because horses have escaped their stable. Grass sickness is a relatively common disease amongst horses that impairs their digestive tract, often resulting in fatality. When relating to horses, to founder means to succumb to laminitis, which is inflammation of sensitive tissue inside the hoof, particularly prominent amongst ponies feeding on rich spring grass. Fain is defined as pleased or willing under the circumstances, so the horses are happy to die, which infers a prior suffering. Grass sickness is a real disease for horses, but it is possible that Joanna is using it to represent the horses overfeeding on rich grass. The horses got loose from their stables, and upon doing so, they found themselves surrounded by an excess of food. Not knowing any better, or potentially on purpose, the horses ate themselves sick and are on the verge of dying because of it. At least that's what we're being told. It is entirely possible that the horses escaped and are free, but the stable boy says they'll die as a way to discourage anyone else from escaping.
What is now known by the sorrel and the roan, by the chestnut and the bay and the gelding gray, it is stay by the gate that you are given and remain in your place for your season and had the overfed it, but listen to the high fence horse.
Sorrels, roans, chestnuts, bays, and grays are all names for horses who, having seen what happened to their fellow horses upon leaving the stable, now know that they should stay within the boundaries they've been given. We note the word gelding is used to describe something that is castrated, and this could be used to represent either the horse's lack of courage to escape his stable or the abusive tendencies of the leader of the farm. The use of the phrase overfed dead seems to support the theory of grass sickness representing their excessive consumption. High-fenced horse sense is a cool rhyme. Horse sense is a phrase that can be equated to common sense. The high fence refers to the barriers this horse is surrounded by. This horse is described as wise for preaching the common sense that others should not attempt to escape their confinement. I think this is likely ironic at heart. Horse sense and wisdom naturally contrast each other, so I think Joanna is poking fun at this particular horse, whose high fences could be likened to the narrow-mindedness of someone who abides by all of society's norms. Let's think about what we were just presented. We are placed on a farmland with these two characters, a monkey and a bear. I don't know about you guys, but when I think of farm animals, neither monkey nor bear comes to mind. Both monkeys and bears have been used in circuses, though, so it's possible the farmland we have been described is part of a circus. Some of the horses escape their confinement and allegedly get sick due to their intemperance. This could be fairly symbolical. We could interpret the farm or circus to be representative of a small town or society. Here, the horses would symbolize those who conform to the norms of the societal structure they find themselves in. The fact that some horses escape their captivity could represent those who reject social norms, whether it be quitting their 9-to-5 jobs, being openly gay, or breaking of any other of these norms. It doesn't really matter. What is important is that once they are free from their internment, they reportedly die from overindulgence. The use of the word feign suggests that they commit suicide as a way to completely escape their prior suppression, but it could also be an overindulgence in something like drugs caused by their lack of restraint. Regardless of literal or figurative meaning, we know that these animals are being mistreated in some way or another.
Did you hear that? Bear said monkey will get out of here fair and square. They left the gate open wide. So, my bride, here is my hand, where is your paw? Try and understand my plan, Ursula, my heart.
We are told that Monkey sees a way to escape from this abuse. Apparently, those who went out in search of the horses left the gate open, and Monkey does not want to lose this opportunity. Monkey calls the bear his bride, meaning we can now assume genders upon these two characters, with the monkey being the male and bear being the female. Notably, he calls her Ursula. In Latin, the word Ursa means bear, and as we mentioned last episode, Ursa Major is a constellation known as the Great Bear. There is also a children's book called Ursula Bear in which a little girl wants to be a bear. She finds a magic spell book and hastily finds the spell that would turn her into a bear. But in her excitement, she forgot to look at the spell that would turn her back into a little girl, so she is stuck as a bear forever. Either of these could be reason for the bear's name, but with the mention of the Pleiades and the Big Dipper in Emily, it is likely a direct reference to Ursa Major.
Ursula, my heart is a furnace, full of love that's just an earnest. Now you know that we must unlearn this. Allegiance to a life of service, and no longer answer to that heartless haymonger, nor be his accomplice, the charlatan with artless hearts.
Monkey then says to Ursula that his heart is a furnace that burns with love for her. Upon declaring his love for her, he swiftly moves on to the task at hand, convincing Ursula that they must leave. This allegiance to a life of service is another way to describe the working life, and Monkey tells Ursula that it doesn't have to be this way. A monger refers to a seller of goods, so Monkey calls the owner a hay merchant, which is likely meant to be derogatory. A charlatan is a person falsely claiming to have special knowledge, in other words, a fraud. The use of the phrase artless hustling is curious. It is written on the lyric sheet in parentheses, which suggests that Monkey thinks this but does not say it aloud. It implies that Monkey believes there to be some art in hustling. By calling his hustle artless, Monkey seems to believe that he could do better than their previous master.
But Ursula, we've got to eat something and learn not while still within the borders of the land. Men as girded, all double bolted and tight fisted, until we reach the open country, a steeped in milk and honey.
Immediately after claiming that they don't have to live in allegiance to a life of service, Monkey says that they do have to eat, or that they do have to earn money somehow. Something that is girded is encircled, so despite escaping the confinement of the farm, they still find themselves within the borders of the land of men, which means society is still structured around earning money via some type of work. In parentheses, Monkey thinks of the borders as all double-bolted and tight-fisted. Monkey knows internally that there is no escape from this life of work in exchange for money, but he makes sure not to say this aloud and assures Bear that they will be liberated at some point. Monkey tells Bear that they will have to earn a living somehow, but Monkey promises Bear that it is temporary, and that once they reach the open country, they will be steeped in milk and honey. Steeped means to be soaking in something, and milk and honey already means prosperity and abundance. So Monkey is assuring Bear that there is a promised land waiting for them. This brings up the feeling of ever reaching for something that is unattainable, like the grapes of Tantalus ever being out of reach. Also, we make sure to note that the phrase milk and honey is used frequently in the Bible.
Milk and honey. Keep your fancy clothes on for me. Can you bear a little longer to wear that leash, my love? I swear by the air I breathe, sooner or later you'll bear your teeth.
Mungi then asks Ursula to keep her fancy clothes on, and I think this is meant to represent a few things related to the female experience. The fact that Mungi asks Bear to keep the clothes on for him implies Bear's desire to get out of these clothes. We can visualize this as a woman in heels or an uncomfortable yet pretty dress. The clothes are for her external appearance, but she desires to wear something more freeing, perhaps something more true to who she really is. In the coming lines, we will see the fancy clothes as part of a great performance by Bear, in which Mungi plays the organ while Bear dances for an audience. We'll analyze what that could represent when we get there, but for now, we'll just make note of the clothes being part of that performance. In the line immediately following, we hear the clever use of a homonym. A homonym is when a word sounds the same as another word, but has a different meaning. Here, Joanna uses the verb bear to mean to endure, playing off of the earlier use of the word, which referred to the animal name. The fact that Ursula needs to bear wearing a leash a little longer implies her previously wearing a leash back at the farm. The leash symbolizes Ursula's imprisonment, but we should see something strange here. A leash would never be able to keep a bear from getting free if it wanted to. Bears are one of the most powerful animals that exist in the wild, and the fact that Ursula has been and will continue to be wearing a leash indicates that she is not fully aware of how strong she truly is. Just like their previous master, Mungi seems to have convinced her that she needs to stay by him and do as he requests. Externally, we are able to see the absurdity of a Mungi leashing a bear, but Ursula herself does not realize that she is far stronger than the Mungi. The next line sees another clever use of a homonym, again playing off of the word bear. Here, Joanna uses the verb bear, B-A-R-E, which means to uncover. By saying that sooner or later she'll bare her teeth, Mungi reinforces the idea that eventually she'll be able to be herself. Also, I'd like to point out a few notable things about the language used here. These lines are filled with rhymes and consonants, so much so that it's almost mind-melting. In these half-promises Mungi offers in this verse, we hear a constant repetition of the R's. Here are the words with the letter R in this stanza. Bride, hear, wear, try, understand, Ursula, heart, furnace, earnest, unlearn, service, answer, heartless, monger, charlatan, artless, Ursula, earn, borders, girded, country, your, for, bear, longer, wear, swear, air, breathe, sooner, later, bear. The unceasing use of this R sound, combined with Joanna's emphasizing of the consonant, creates a growl, a purr throughout the verse that indicates to the listener that the Mungi is up to something. If the R sound is not necessarily specifically supposed to mean something, we can still interpret this jumble of words to be representative of the frantic and nonsensical promises Mungi is making to Bear. They're deliberately confusing and rapid in succession, so that Bear doesn't truly think about what the Mungi is saying, and instead just believes him.
But now, just dance, darling. Come on, will you dance, my darling? Darling, there's a place for us. Can we go before I turn to dust? Oh, my darling, there's a place for us.
As we mentioned earlier, the chorus shows us the performance Bear is putting on. Mungi keeps asking if Ursula will dance for him, and we can see the real abuse begin here. He is aware of Ursula's fondness for him, and he develops a conditional love from it. Though never saying it explicitly, the chorus suggests that he will love her and they will reach the promised land if she continues to perform for him. The hills groaning with excess like a table ceaselessly being set is vintage Joanna. Effortlessly, she uses this brilliant scenery to portray the vast surplus that Bear is constantly being promised. The image of this endless table with empty dishes, cutlery, and glasses all being set for this massive feast, which isn't here yet, but we are continually assured that it will be eventually. Before getting into verse 2, let's take a moment to think about the possible meaning of this performance. Rather uncharacteristically, Joanna has openly shot down one of the interpretations from this chorus. In the 2006 interview with The Wire, Joanna says, quote, "I'd actually say, believe it or not, the motif of the performing bear, the dancing bear who's just being egged on throughout, has nothing to do with my experience of being a performer. I think the idea of the performance in the song has more to do with the relationship between the monkey and the bear than anything else, like conditional love. The monkey saying, if you just dance a little bit longer, and if you keep those chains on, and if you keep that costume on, then under those conditions, then I'll continue to love you." End quote. Joanna rarely shoots down any interpretations of her lyrics, but I think she wanted to clarify this one particularly because she wanted it to be clear that this isn't some comment on being a musician or performer. Rather, as Joanna said, "I think we can interpret this chorus as a social commentary of the performances we all put on, specifically the female experience in a bad relationship, one of conditional love. She doesn't stand up for herself and what she wants to do, but rather performs a dance for everyone else but herself. She wears clothes that she doesn't like and puts on a performance she doesn't want to, all to please this monkey."
They troop past the guards, past the coops and the fields and the farmyards, all night till finally the space they gain grew much farther in the stone that bear through to mark where they'd stop for tea. But walk a little faster and don't look backwards. Your feast is to the east, which lies a little past the pasture.
Verse 2 begins describing the pair sneaking out of the farm, and we note a few things. First, the clever use of trooped, meaning to be together, against the word guards. Clever writing again, because guards in a group could be referred to as a troop. We also see that they are passing a lot of things, coops, fields, farmyards. They have covered some distance. Joanna then uses a metaphor of a stone being thrown to mark where they'd stop for tea as a way to describe the location Monkey initially told Bear they were headed to. Bear seemingly thought they wouldn't be traveling as far, or at least that they would be stopping for tea somewhere, so we can see immediately that Monkey has not been open and honest with Bear about his plan. Monkey then tells Bear to pick up the pace and not to look back, doubling down on the idea that they are traveling towards a place where Bear can feast. As we've seen multiple times already, this feast is always just beyond their reach, even though they have traveled a good distance.
Past the pasture, and the blackbirds hear tea whistling and rise and clap, and their applause calls the kettle black. And we can't have none of that. Move along, bear, there, there, that's that. Go casting plaster, our Ursula's heartbeat faster than monkeys ever will.
We then see Monkey spiral further into an exploitative liar. He tells Bear that the reason they couldn't stop for tea is because blackbirds rise and clap at the sound of a teapot whistling. This is nonsense. An outright lie Monkey tells to get Ursula to stop complaining, telling her to move along, bear, there, that's that. There is a saying used to console someone, often in a very half-hearted manner. It offers no help aside from confirming that you are aware of someone else's hurt. The rushed tone of this line also plays into the idea that Monkey does not care about what Bear feels or wants. He keeps pushing her towards his goal. Joanna then describes Bear's heart as being cast in plaster. Plaster is a mix of lime, sand, and water, used for its ability to spread easily when wet, but dry into a hard, solid surface. Her heart being cast in plaster could symbolize Bear not being aware of her true strength. The plaster, which could represent her feelings for Monkey, is limiting her power. The fact that Ursula's heart beat faster than Monkey's displays the reality that Bear is far more in love with Monkey than Monkey is with her. A small aside, we note some of the beautiful internal rhymes presented in those stanzas that make this verse like candy for our ears. Feast, east, past, pasture, here, tea, applause, cause, bear, there, and cast, plaster.
But still, they had got to pay the bills, hadn't they? That is what the monkey'd say. So, with the courage of a clown or a cur or a kite jerking tight at its tether in her dumb brown...
With these lines, we are presented with a monumental moment. Without Monkey's words, Bear's own conscience tells her what Monkey would say. The importance of this cannot be overstated. Monkey's plan has worked. He has successfully made Bear internalize her dependence. He has convinced her that she does need to continue this dance. She believes it so much so that Monkey doesn't even have to tell her anymore. She tells herself what Monkey would say. This internalized abuse is applicable to so many abusive relationships. The abuser decisively conditions the abused to internalize the beliefs that they too need the other person. What is Bear gaining from this relationship? She is forced to do things she doesn't want to do with the promise that it will eventually be worthwhile, but it never will. Monkey, on the other hand, is able to profit from the relationship by making Bear dance for him. This is not a codependent relationship, but Monkey has made Bear believe that it is. Joanna describes Ursula as a coward in the following lines. With the courage of a clown or a cur or a kite jerking tight at its tether. The clown displays how Ursula continues to do these performances where she embarrasses herself against her will for Monkey's benefit. A cur is another name for a dog in poor condition, and we can interpret that as Ursula being the dog and Monkey being the master mistreating it. A kite is something that appears to want to be free, to fly with the wind, but it is ever tied to the ground via its tether, clearly representative of Ursula's inability to free herself from her own tether. Let's also take a look at the pronunciation of these words. Clown, cur, kite, jerking, tight, its, tether. The pronunciation of these C's, K's, and T's cut sharply through our headphones. With the last line being about a kite jerking tight at its tether, this masterful alliteration in consonants subtly presents Bear's desire to be rid of this leash, to cut the tether and be free. We pause to make note of something. Bear has not said a word yet. Our narrator is describing the scene, and the only dialogue present is from Monkey's mouth. This is quite clearly intentional. Bear's silence represents the lack of agency women have in reality. Whether it be old white men making laws about what they can or can't do with their bodies, or any one of the numerous limitations placed upon women in societal norms, women have always had less say in their lives than men have in their own.
In her dun brown gown of fur and a jerkin of swan's down in leather, there would sway on her hind legs, the organ would grind dregs of song. For the pleasure of the children who'd shriek, throwing coins at her feet and recoiling in terror.
Continuing, the description of Bear's clothes is noticeably uncomfortable. Dun brown gown of fur describes her fur as a gown, which reminds us of the fancy clothes lyric from earlier. Then, her jerkin of swan's down in leather becomes rather grotesque. A jerkin is a sleeveless jacket, and this jacket is seemingly made from the feathers and leathers of other animals. This description not only describes the outfit as grungy, but also the use of other animals strengthens the idea that this outfit is unnatural to Bear. Joanna then details the scene of the performance itself. Bear sways on her hind legs as the monkey plays the organ. The fact that the performance is for children is strange, but stranger too is how they throw coin at Bear and then recoil in terror. This makes me think of a clown, especially since the word was used earlier. A clown is brought to kids' parties for the enjoyment of the kids. It is supposed to make them laugh at their absurd appearance. Often, though, the clown's appearance terrifies a child, much like how Ursula's appearance seemingly terrifies the children here. The chorus is then repeated, but with one crucial change. Monkey no longer implies his conditional love. He outright says it.
My
is no more subtlety at play here. This conditional love has been exposed from the exploiter himself. No longer can Ursula pretend to be unaware of what's going on. Before we conclude this episode, let's take a small aside to talk about organ grinders and monkeys. In what is likely the weirdest thing I have learned throughout my research for this project, organ grinders used to perform on the streets with a monkey. The monkey was not part of the performance, rather the monkey was used because it had thumbs and could carry a cup around the audience to collect coins. The term organ grinder's monkey has been used most frequently in British culture to describe someone who does the will of a powerful person while having no power themselves. He's the organ grinder's monkey. His only role in life is to get money for his boss. This tidbit is incredibly relevant to our story. If we consider our own monkey here to be the organ grinder's monkey, then the powerful person he worked for was surely the farm owner. At this point in the story, Monkey has ditched his previous master, and using what he learnt from the past, he now uses Ursula in a similar manner to the way the farm owner would have used him. This also explains the line, "The organ would grind dregs of song." Dregs are unwanted remnants of something, so Monkey's songs are described as unpleasant, which fits with our understanding that he was just the monkey before, now he is the organ grinder despite likely not being very talented. Let's take it a step further. As many of you likely knew before this episode, or as many of you have probably deduced yourselves while listening to this episode, this song reeks of George Orwell's Animal Farm. I assume that the majority of listeners are familiar with what the book is, so I won't go into too much detail. Essentially, Orwell uses farm animals who are getting exploited by their owners to symbolize the working class getting exploited in real life. The story that develops is of an uprising organized by some of the animals to overthrow their abusive masters. The real message of Animal Farm occurs after they have overthrown their masters, where the newly elected leaders, who swore to be more just than the previous masters, actually end up being just as bad, if not worse. Coming back to our song, we can see the parallels between that story and Monkey and Bears. Monkey persuades Bear to escape their previous confinement, but we can already tell how Monkey exploits Bear for his own benefit, just as the previous owner did. I think it's fair to liken the exploited farm animals to an organ grinder's monkey. The monkey escapes his previous organ grinder, only to become the exploitative organ grinder himself. That concludes this episode. Be sure to tune in next week where we continue our analysis of Monkey and Bear.